understand the nature of and the remedy for discouragement. And what better way to find a remedy to discouragement than to rejoice? And obviously, as was mentioned already, on a beautiful spring morning like this, when you wake up and you hear the birds singing and the sun is shining, it's pretty easy to be rejoicing. But a couple weeks ago, we had about a solid week of rain. It just rained and rained and rained, and there was flooding and there was more rain. And situations like that can cause us to start becoming discouraged. This lesson this morning stands in stark contrast with our lesson last week. Last week we had a very interesting discussion in our church. I wasn't here, so I don't know what you discussed. But if you remember how the last lesson ended, it ended with the very last verse in our reading. It says, when all the people saw it, they fell on their faces and they said, the Lord, He is God, the Lord, He is God. And a great miracle had happened there. Fire had come down from heaven. And you would think that with all that had happened, that Elijah wouldn't have ended up in that juniper tree. But unfortunately, all of us probably spend too much time under the juniper tree. Not literally necessarily, but... And if anyone here today can honestly say they've never been discouraged, I would love to hear how they managed to do that. I cannot say that. I can't say that I've never been discouraged. But rest assured, when you are discouraged, somewhere, something has happened that has caused us to get our focus off of God and to zero in on our problems. And there was one thought in our principles and applications that I thought really stood out to me. I'll just quickly read it. It says, we tend to overestimate our problems and to look within ourselves for the answers. Two problems there right away. We're overestimating how big the problem is, and then we look here for the solution. Well, there's no way we're going to fix it because we already made it so big and we can't solve it. So only God can solve our problems with His help. And with His help, we can also look at it realistically. Anyway, let's again focus on our lesson here. I'd like to read the first paragraph of our lesson focus. As the stage was set for a major revival in Israel, God had answered Elijah by fire on Mount Carmel. Elijah had purged Israel of the false prophets. Elijah likely thought this situation would provide the needed momentum for a mass return to God that even Ahab and Jezebel would need to acknowledge. I think in that paragraph we already see a little hint of what happened. Elijah says likely thought the situation would provide the needed momentum. He was already kind of got an idea that somehow through this is going to be a mass revival. And when that didn't happen, I think that was kind of maybe the first step towards discouragement. And again, at the very last paragraph of our lesson focus says, the enemy excels at bringing discouragement to one who has just experienced victory. Discouragement obscures one's view of God and hinders his usefulness. That's very true. If we experience a great victory in our life, get ready for the devil to try to quickly get us off track. He wants us to stumble. Any thoughts anyone had on our lesson focus or our theme verse or just any comments or thoughts that anyone would have? That's a great possibility, yes. Any thoughts on that? Why wasn't there a great revival immediately after what happened on Mount Carmel? Anybody have a thought on that? Is that what you're suggesting, Tim, that he shouldn't have gone to the wilderness?
Well, it does appear the scene, as you mentioned it there at on the mountain, after the people responded in worship, they responded And yet, I didn't go back and look at the exact timelines, but Elijah moved off the scene pretty quickly. It was, what, days, hours? I don't know if it's exactly in front of me, but I just was, my mind was rolling through. I went back and looked for it. And in our mission meeting, mission service at Calvary, one of the things that Steve Adams said was, opportunities are always coupled with adversities. Unbelief sees obstacles. Faith sees opportunities. Fear, unbelief, and delay have kept the church from many opportunities.
Amen.
I just thought it sort of fit. Does that fit to this situation?
After the people said, the Lord, He is God, the Lord, He is God, what better time to preach a real fiery revival message would have been right there, but we don't see that Elijah did that. Any other thoughts?
It is interesting that after witnessing what happened there, with the fire, the killing of the prophet, that he was so quickly fearful.
Yeah, that moves us right into the first question. Why did Elijah fear for his life? What really happened in his life that so greatly caused him to fear? Any thoughts on that? What was the fear in his life?
I think he slew 450 or 800 some prophets of Baal.
850, I think.
Yeah, he knew he had angered this woman to an extreme degree. So there was a reason for her to be angry at him.
Right, yeah.
Was it just an off-the-cuff, get you, Elijah?
Yeah, I think that one of the things that in the teacher's guide it told me to study the life of Jezebel to get a little picture of who this lady was. This was not just some idle threat. This was not just somebody that says, I hate you, I really wish you wouldn't be in my life. This was... Jezebel ruled in a way that if you displeased her, in an instant your life was snuffed out. If she did not mess around, if she decided to do something, action usually followed. And so here, this threat that she made was a serious threat. But again, if you take it into focus of what had just happened, you would think that Elijah wouldn't have so quickly ran away in fear. Was there anything else that Elijah was fearing at that time?
When I think about, okay, so he spent all day waiting while they were looking for their God to answer, and didn't answer the prophets of Baal. And then when he got his answer, still, it had to be emotionally taxing all day long.
Mm-hmm.
Believe God would answer, and yet, how would God really show himself? But God did. But, and then to go ahead and slay all those prophets and deal with that, he had to be completely, without strength. I mean, wasted.
Right. Yeah.
He wasn't human.
Yes. That is interesting that he was physically exhausted, but remember what he did soon thereafter? He ran ahead of the chariot all the way into the city, and... But yeah, that is a very good point, that when we become physically completely exhausted, sometimes we don't see things in a rational way. We allow fears to look, everything looks bigger when we're really tired. Yes. Any other thoughts?
Also contributing to that is Elijah put himself in a position where he was by himself. A lot of us, a lot of people, if he had been busy working with other people and surrounding himself with something like encouraging people along to worship the Lord and make a change, like, I think discouragement is a big factor for him, because when you're all by yourself, you tend to feel alone and down. It's a lot easier to delve into that aspect.
Absolutely right. Yeah. Why did he run to the wilderness instead of looking for somebody to help encourage him? So what are some circumstances that would cause us to fear? We focus on Elijah. It's very easy to focus on him and say what he should or should not have done. But what are some circumstances that cause us to fear?
It doesn't appear like he found himself alone. Like, he thought he was the only one that serving God.
So
I wonder what circumstances were. God revealed him there were still seven battles.
Right.
Apparently he didn't know.
Right. Yes, Tim.
Why didn't any of those 7,000 join him on the mountain? It does sound like he was there once too.
Well, I think that one possible reason is that Jezebel had, she ruled as a tyrant, I think, literally. And so there was very few people who were going to, they recognized the power of God, but weren't quite ready to jump on his bandwagon.
And I think rather than saying it in a negative way, I think it just, why didn't they, it's a fair question, but maybe it's not as fair as we think. Maybe it's more of a statement of what Elijah actually did than what those.
Yeah. See, Roger could send out a one call message and have them all come join
him. That is a good point. Yeah. Yeah. Any circumstances that anyone can think of that would cause us to fear today? I don't think anybody was afraid to come to church this morning. They were afraid that would be something to fear. But are there situations in our lives that we fear? Take it by the silence that we're very brave people. And that's nothing wrong with that. But I think that in life today, there's definitely things that, as we go through life, that we can, if we don't focus on God, can very easily become overwhelmed and discouraged with, whether it's financial reverses, whether it's health issues, or if it's just simply the condition that the world is becoming. And don't have to read much about politics, and to sometimes you think, you know, where is this all going to end, and where is the Christian church going to be in 30 years or even 10 years? At the way things are going, you know, where are we going to be in 30 years, 50 years? What are my children going to have to face? I can really identify with that. I mean, the things that we see today and the moral decay, and think if it continues to get worse and worse in the next 10, 20, 30 years, where are we going to be? But I guess the same God that was able to send fire down from heaven is also still with us today in America. So not saying that life is going to be easy or like we know it today, but I truly think that God will be faithful and will help us. Okay, moving on into our next part here. It says, question 3, what provisions that would help him in his journey did God make for Elijah? God made some provisions for him. What were those provisions? That's a very good point, yes. Because you don't find anywhere, at least I didn't, that Elijah asked, as soon as that threat came, did Elijah fall on his face before God and said, God, what shall I do? I haven't found that he said that. He just ran off into the wilderness, but God knew exactly where he was, and he found him, and he still had work for him to do. I think that's very good. That's a good point. One other thing that stood out to me as I was studying is, again, back in our first part, Jezebel threatened to kill him, so he's afraid and he runs away. But one of the first things he says when he's under the juniper tree is, God, take my life. He wanted to die. So, okay, we're running away to save our life, but now I want to die. It was kind of an interesting fact there, because I don't really think Elijah wanted to die. He was just discouraged. And I think sometimes when we're discouraged, we say things that we don't actually mean. Any other provisions that God made for Elijah here? Any of us ever eat some food and go on the strength of that food for 40 days? was pretty significant. I mean, that was some pretty serious high-energy food. Yes, it said he went in that strength of that meat 40 days and 40 nights. So God provided very richly for him in that way. Moving on to question four, I think this was a good question we can discuss. Is what benefits may one who is discouraged derive from the question, what doest thou here? God asked him, what doest thou here? What can we derive from this question? Did God ever ask us that question? Any thoughts on that?
It's interesting that he asked the question after he provided for his needs.
Mm-hmm.
He ate several times and now let's think about this now.
Yeah, I think that's a good point that he didn't just come down, and sometimes we do that with our children. They're in a situation where we aren't real pleased with them. We say, you know, what's going on, you know? But here God provided for him and recognized that he was there and then asked the question, you know, what are you really doing here, Elijah? It's interesting that Elijah had an answer for him. He was convinced that he was the only one left. And how can we apply this to our life? Any thoughts on that?
What are you doing here? Or how did you get here? We start to go back through our mind. What took us to this?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what God wanted Elijah to reflect on. How did you get to this point? And it is interesting that the angel knew that he was going to go to Mount Horeb. He said, arise and eat because the journey is too great for thee.
Mm-hmm.
So God didn't stop him there, but he fed him, left him, and actually Elijah knew that
yes. Yeah, I think it's very important that we sometimes just stop and analyze why are we where we are, or if we're trying to help someone, help them find out why they are where they are. Because often we get into a negative thought pattern, and before we know it, we make choices, we go places, we do things that we sometimes don't even know why we're doing it until we stop and think. And God asks us those questions. Any other thoughts?
Well, we say a lot of times discouragement comes after a very dark experience.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's what really God wants to think about. What else started with chapter 6? The happy golden crown
problem. Mm-hmm.
Remember what happened there. And think about it, the power that God had.
Absolutely. Right, right. It's a very good point, yes. When we have a mountaintop experience, obviously we had something, but then why did we fall off the mountain? And very interesting. But I think, too, that if our brother has a mountaintop experience, where are we to help rally around him, too, even after that? If the people would have followed Elijah immediately, now I guess I'm trying to put a little bit of responsibility on the people. Would Elijah have ended up in the wilderness if they would have stood up to him and supported him and said, hey, where do we go from here? What can we do here? And but we don't see that had actually happened. And so somewhere Elijah picked up the idea that he's completely alone in this, and which wasn't the truth.
I'm right along with that. I think fear of failure. I think that some of what Elijah was saying to God, my ministry is a failure.
Mm-hmm.
I'm alone. And it wasn't. We look back and think of Elijah as a man of faith and an amazing inspiration.
Right.
That, I think that's fears that haunt.
Yeah. we can obviously look at the picture after everything happened. Elijah was right in the midst of it here. But yes, I appreciate those thoughts.
I noticed that God did not say, why are you here? First of all, God already knew. Mm-hmm. He didn't really need to have that. I think maybe Elijah was already thinking about those things. But he said, why are you here? And the point was, he was simply, I believe, wanting Elijah to recognize that this isn't where God wanted to be. And that there was an experience, a God who he knew, who had done this great deed, and this same God was ready to empower him, to direct him. But Elijah just wasn't ready for it.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, Elijah, I have another place for you. And I want you to move along, but in other words, Elijah needed to also, God again wasn't going to force him.
Right. Yes, I appreciate that thought. And our principle in the applications here, again, there's one that says, discouragement diminishes our usefulness. While we're in our discouraged state, we're not just very useful because we're kind of stalled out, kind of like a car that won't start or a horse that balks. We're just not moving, and God can't use us at that as far as in the usefulness there. So it's very important that we stop and analyze why we're discouraged and find a solution to that. I guess I'm not condemning anyone to when they do face discouragement, because discouraging things come in our lives. It's if we completely stall out and don't move from that spot and just look more and more inward. Question 5, what is significant in the fact that God was not in the wind, the earthquake, or the fire, but that he spoke in a still, small voice? Why did God choose to do that?
I think it's significant in the fact that it illustrates that God is a social being.
Okay.
Because God is such a powerful being. He can demonstrate himself in powerful demonstrations of wind and earthquake and fire. But by taking time to speak in a small voice, God, he wants to communicate with us in language. And God also had a loud voice that he demonstrated on Mount Sinai and scared the people.
Right.
And he chose to speak to God in a very still, small voice. And I like to think of that also in the coming of Jesus. When God demonstrated and revealed himself to the world through his son Jesus, it was actually a still, small voice. Jesus didn't have thundering loud voices, but quietly and distinctly to people, and wasn't fearful to him, because God wants us to draw us to him, not scare us away with loud voices.
Yeah.
And so, if God would not have only decided to demonstrate himself to the world in violent demonstrations of nature, we would be so terrified we couldn't keep our wits together. Something that we can understand, something that we can relate to is a creature that's made in his image.
I appreciate those thoughts. That's a very, very good point. And I think that's very important that we see God in that way. And I guess that the thought came to me that we as parents need to be very careful that that's the way we speak to our children too. Because often, we are the first God in their life, so to speak. I mean, the parent figure, if we're rough and loud and often that's the picture they get of God. But if we can speak to them when they do fail or whatever, in a still small voice, in a kind way, they will a lot sooner see God in that same picture. So yes, I think it's very noteworthy that he didn't come down like he did on Mount Sinai and shake the mountain and fire, but that he spoke to Elijah in a still small voice. And I think God, if we in our busy lives, if we stop and listen, God wants to speak to us today yet. Yeah, but sometimes, if we don't, maybe sometimes he has to get a hold of us and shake us a little bit, so we will stop and listen, and so he can speak to us. Any other thoughts on that question?
Here's my thoughts. We're running along the same line. It's a beautiful picture of God. No doubt he had Elijah's attention through
what
was going on.
Right.
But it's beautiful that he, after that was over, the way he spoke to him, God did that in our lives as well. Maybe we tend to focus in on the tough things that come along that he shakes us up with and gets our attention.
Mm-hmm.
And we can feel like that's him talking to us, but we, like we mentioned, God was, we need to get our attention sometimes, but he would rather talk to us next.
Absolutely. Yeah, I appreciate that. Any other thoughts?
I think one of the things God does is seeks to bring the honor and glory to himself. If everything would have been for Elijah the way he thought it should have, okay, he had the mountaintop experience, and he had his ideas of how this should all go. Had it entered on into a real revival, and Elijah would have stayed there. The focus after a while would have pretty much been on Elijah.
Yeah.
And, you know, God had a way of dealing. And God works like that in our lives today. In other words, he balances us out through giving us the mountaintop experience, but also taking us into the valley again and realizing that I am God. I'm going to have the honor.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yes, if right directly after that, Elijah would have, the 7,000 people would have rallied around him and he would have had a great revival. What would that have done to Elijah? Elijah had a few lessons to learn yet, apparently. It's a very, very good point. Any other thoughts? I'm not sure when your bell goes here. I don't want to. Why don't we go down to question 7 then, if we're almost out of time. It says, how can we receive help in times of discouragement? Is there any practical ways that anyone wants to share? What are some things that you found helpful to deal with discouragement if you face discouragement? Any thoughts on that?
From the church.
From the church? Okay, that's a good one. Yes?
I think many times, to consult Christian counsel, good solid Christian counsel, surround yourself with brothers or sisters, whatever the case may be, that you know that are seeking God, you know that are being directed by God, not by the world, but by some other spirit. And those people will come alongside you.
Absolutely. And they can also help us look at it realistically. So many times we've got an off-balance view of what's going on here. And get some solid Christian brothers or sisters to help us look at this situation and get a balanced view, and it's really not as bad as you think it is, and helps us be able to focus on it. Any other thoughts?
I think we need to just recognize that there are going to be these times in our lives. And as much as we don't like them, it is part of the testing of our faith. If we don't, and maybe this was fits in question number 2, list some circumstances that could cause us to fear. Sometimes if we don't deal with the fear as much because we have figured out ways to try to eliminate that from our lives. We have many control mechanisms. We have a lot of things that bring stability. A lot of those things aren't wrong in and of themselves, but they try to bring us to a more secure place in life. I guess what I'm saying is that we just need to understand there are times when there's going to be these times. We can look at these accounts and understand men of God. We'll think about David, those men. So we recognize this is part of our journey, and yet through that we need to find God in it.
Yeah, I appreciate those times. Yes, be realistic that we are going to have times of discouragement, but I like the thoughts that if we surround ourselves with godly brothers and sisters and keep a healthy walk with God, we will not be overcome by this discouragement. So the very, I guess, summarizing the lesson, the verse that's at the very bottom, it says, greater is he that is in you than he that is in the world. If we keep that in focus. Yes, you have a thought? That's a very good point. Yes, I appreciate that. And then as parents or adults have to be willing to not be grouchy either. And be, by example, if nothing else, choose to wake up in the morning, even if things aren't going well, to choose to be rejoicing, as we heard in our devotions. So appreciate everyone's input here, and hopefully we can all be encouraged and be an encourager. If we really see people who are discouraged, I think it's our responsibility to reach out, and maybe there is a brother or sister that is discouraged. What can we do to help them? I think that's also a way we actively are reaching out to others. It's pretty hard to stay discouraged yourself if you're reaching out and helping others. God bless you.